Hello and welcome to Scholars Speak, a podcast from the Mitchell Institute, in which we catch up with Mitchell scholars far and wide to hear their stories. Thank you for joining me, your host, Michelle Martin, the 1999 Mitchell Scholar from Scarborough High School, for today's episode of Scholars Speak. And now let's get to it. So today we are joined by Christina Lemieux. Christina and I had a chance to actually connect pretty recently within the last year or so. And we are both in the same industry. So just a lot of great stuff to chat about there. And we're so excited to have you today to tell us a little bit more about the journey and adventure that you've been on since getting the Mitchell Institute scholarship, but also leaving Maine. So welcome, Christina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you just start by telling us a little bit more about where you grew up and where you went to high school? I know that this is a beautiful and special place in Maine that is still really important to you.
Yeah, I grew up in Cutler, which is a small fishing village way down east. It's a blink and you'll miss it type of town. When I was doing research for my book, I found an MIT report that described Cutler as little more than a curve in the road. And so it's small, and I'm a bit biased, but it really is one of the most beautiful fishing villages in all of Maine. It has this perfectly formed harbor. It's filled with lobster fishing boats. And then at the head of the harbor, there's a small island with a lighthouse, which is where my grandmother grew up. She was the daughter of a lighthouse keeper. So it's just, you know, very picturesque, very much a working lobster fishing village.
And your family is still there?
Yeah, it's now five generations of people in the lobster industry. My great-great-grandfather, he ran a lobster smack, so transporting lobsters up and down the coast, and then bought a wharf, which my grandfather took over, Ferris Wharf, and my grandfather also fished for lobsters. My dad's a lobster fisherman. My brother's a lobster fisherman. Then he's got two sons who are in the industry as well. And then I went to Washington Academy, which is in East Machias, Maine. So that's a bit about where I'm from.
You mentioned a book. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, in 2012, I published a book about the lobster fishing industry in down east Maine. It's called How to Catch a Lobster in Down East Maine. And, you know, it came from, I worked on my dad's boat as a stern man from the age of 10 until I graduated from college. And, you know, you come in at the end of the day to the dock to, you know, unload your catch. And in the summer, there'd almost always be a tourist down there waiting for you at the end of the dock with a lot of interesting questions and a real eagerness to understand the industry. And the book was born of an understanding that people across the world are fascinated by the lobster industry. It is one of the last remaining artisanal enterprises in America. And I just think that the legacy and the culture of these communities and the industry is special and something worth capturing and preserving.
That's amazing. I'm excited to read that. I have not yet read your book. And I think coming from your experience, it must be just such a great story to tell and one that people are really interested in. So when you were graduating from Washington Academy, how did you that senior year learn about the Mitchell Institute scholarship? And what do you remember about that?
I think that 1995, and that was the first year that the scholarship was offered. It was probably via my guidance counselor. I must admit, I can't remember specifically how I heard of the scholarship, but I think it was just wonderful to hear that there was scholarship specifically for Maine students and, you know, people that were primarily first generation college students, and just the whole ethos of the scholarship and institute really spoke to me.
Was there anybody kind of surrounding you and your family or maybe at school that was really instrumental in your decision to go to college?
Yeah, well, I think I had a sense that I wanted to continue my education, but it was my English literature teacher, Mrs. Plummer, who was really instrumental. And she knew I loved English literature, and she had a daughter who had gone to Bates. And the Colby Bates Bowdoin, just that was not on my radar as the possibility of where I could go to school until, you know, she pulled me aside one day. She said, you know, Christina, you know, you should consider baits. You could go to baits. And I don't think I'd really considered that before. They just seemed out there in terms of the type of environment that I could end up in. And I don't know. And yeah, I guess my dad is from Waterville, Maine. And growing up, we used to go down and visit my grandparents. And you'd be driving down the highway and I ended up going to Colby. But anyway, like you'd see Colby lit up on the hill. And my dad would always point it out to me. And it's so funny because seeing it all those years, I never thought that I would go to a school like that. I felt a bit out of touch until Mrs. Plummer started talking to me about it. And then, you know, when I started, you know, I went and I did a tour of Bates, you know, and then my dad said, well, you know, if you're thinking about Bates, why not think of Colby? And so I went and did a tour of Colby, and I was lucky enough to be accepted at both of those colleges, and I ended up going to Colby. But it was, you know, it was just different people along the way giving me a vote of confidence that those things were in my reach and that I was deserving of those opportunities. And the Mitchell Institute was definitely one of those big votes of confidence.
Do you have any idea where Mrs. Plummer is now?
I have gone back to Washington Academy at her invitation and have spoken to her English classes at various times through the years, not recently, but it's been lovely to go back and see her again and speak with her class.
It's amazing how people like that, who maybe they don't even realize how much of an impact they've had, you know, on the course of your life, but they can just have such that positive influence and look where you are now as a result of those conversations. So now it gets, I think, really interesting. People will love to hear kind of the journey when you went to college and beyond to where you are right now, which is quite a few hours ahead of where I sit. You live in London with your family, and would love to hear more about how you got there.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I want to start with, you know, you asked about my memories of the Mitchell Scholarship, and I do want to take some time to talk about the feeling of receiving it and my memories around that. Even though I can't remember how I heard of the Mitchell Scholarship, I have very clear memories of receiving the scholarship and attending the banquet and how validating that was to me. It was just this huge validation that I was worthy of a college education. And especially, you know, when you come from an environment in Maine where going to college or college like Colby, it certainly isn't the given thing. Especially growing up in a tight-knit lobster fishing community and as part of a lobster fishing family, I was surrounded by people my age who aspired to be lobster fishermen, you know, including my brother. My brother, he even named his boat The Aspiration. And I'm so proud of my family's fishing heritage. And I'm so grateful that the lobster industry continues to be an industry so many people in Maine aspire to be part of. But at the same time, I had different aspirations. And the Mitchell Institute really helped fuel those aspirations. And it wasn't just through the financial support, but it was through that validation that I was worthy of a college education and that I could belong at a college like Colby just as much as my brother belonged in the lobster industry. And I think that that's such an important part of what the Mitchell Institute offers hardworking Maine students, that validation that they deserve a bright future, no matter what their future aspirations are, especially when attending college isn't always a given the way it is in some other parts of the United States. So, and then I also have a lovely memory of attending the banquet in Bangor, you know, of course, meeting the senator, which is really special. But I also have this vivid memory of meeting one of the women who had read my application. And when she realized who I was, she said, oh, you're the lobster fishing cheerleader with, you know, such delight. And of course, you know, on the application, you write about your pastimes and extracurricular activities. And as I mentioned before, from the age of 10, I worked as a stern man on my dad's boat in the winter, you know, in the summers. And in the winters, from probably about the age of 10 as well, I was a active cheerleader in you know, grammar school. Then, of course, at Washington Academy, we won state my junior year.
Wow!
Had to drop that in. But the point is that this Mitchell Institute representative just seemed so delighted in my probably unique Down East Maine background, and that felt really poignant to me that the Institute saw my potential through who I was, and I guess the seeming dichotomy, I guess, because in those, you know, cheerleading, I think, continues to be seen as quite a stereotypical sport that you do as a girl. And in those days, going stern man, as the name describes, it's less rare, especially in those days, to as an occupation or a job that you would do if you were a girl. And so I think that the Mitchell Institute saw through my background my determination to cut my own path in the world. And that just gave me a big boost of confidence.
I love that. And something that you mentioned that is really special about the Mitchell Institute that I know and have experienced is, you know, there are now almost 3,500 Mitchell scholars and alumni. And there's a, you know, small staff in relation to that number. And that team makes everybody feel very much connected and spends a lot of time getting to know the scholars really personally. And so all of us have this feeling of being part of that. And they do things like they call them no agenda coffees, where any Mitchell scholar or alumni can reach out just to kind of catch up and chat. And you never know where those connections are going to go. So I'm just always really impressed by how they do that to then help build us a nice sense of community.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the massive benefits of being a Mitchell scholar. The financial support is so important and crucial, but it is, you're joining a community that's it's a lifelong community to support you and give you guidance when needed. And that's so important and extremely powerful.
Thanks for sharing that. It's great to hear how, especially in the first year of the program, how that all played out for you and that you're still connected to the Institute, which is so fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about the career and sort of how that was born out of what you studied in college, if that's connected at all, or maybe it isn't.
Yeah, well, Colby's a liberal arts school, and I was in English literature and psychology double major. I love writing. I love language. I love the human mind, what drives people, how they think, how they behave. And now I work in advertising, which really is a great field to be in if you're passionate about human behavior, about storytelling, about culture. At the same time, I didn't growing up and know anyone who worked in advertising. And so it felt kind of like a far off dream. I guess I was I was one of those classic small town girls with some big dreams. And I feel very grateful that I've been able to make a number of them a reality. So I graduated from Colby in 1999. It was the peak of the dot-com boom. And I just had this sense that I should go and live in San Francisco, which is, it just seemed so much was happening there. I probably didn't understand exactly what was going on, but I knew it was this hotbed of innovation. And I moved there without a job. I actually moved to Sacramento and lived with my great aunt and then sent my resume to all these different advertising agencies. I was probably really naive. And then it ended up, ironically, being through a connection, a man that my dad met in Cutler Harbor, that I got my first big break in advertising. Talk about serendipity. But a man ended up passing through Cutler Harbor on his pleasure craft. He got some rope and his prop and ended up with some damage to his boat. And my dad, in addition to being a lobster fisherman, he's an engineer and one of the key people in our town that you go to if you've got a problem like that. So my dad ended up not knowing who this guy was, but helping him repair his boat. And the guy was appreciative of my dad's help, wanted to pay him. And my dad was kind of refusing and just saying, you know, it's fine. And then they got into a long conversation, and somehow I was part of that conversation. And my dad ended up mentioning that I was in San Francisco and trying to find a job at advertising. And the guy said, oh, you know, I think I know how I can pay you back. And little did my dad know, but the man was, his name was Bob Schmetterer. And he was at that point CEO of EuroRCG, which is one of the fifth largest global ad networks in the world. So real serendipitous moment. And Bob had, you know, he just gave my dad his business card and said, have your daughter send me her resume. You know, I'm not going to, I won't promise her a job, but I can promise her an interview at my agency in San Francisco. And that really was my start in advertising. And I've been in the industry ever since. My focus is on brand building and communication. So it's looking at a brand, and that I've worked on everything from airlines to automotive technology like Intel. And now I work on a lot of Procter & Gamble brands, but how does a brand present itself to everyday people in a way that's meaningful in a world where everyone's fighting for your attention? The way you do that is through understanding how people think, feel, and behave, and through effective storytelling. And so much of that I learned at my time at Colby.
I love the story of the connection that your dad made. And it's just such a great reminder of, like, you never know where those things are going to happen. And when you're just sort of being your natural self and being helpful and doing all the things you normally would do, it could happen there. So I think it's a great story to tell for sure. It was making me wonder, you know, just about your career decisions and where you grew up and how special that was. Do you feel like some of that desire to be a storyteller came from growing up in a place like that?
Possibly. I do think that the culture and industry of lobster fishing in those small town communities is very unique, and it's fascinating. And people have a lot of questions because it is unique. And so those questions turn into stories. So there's a sense of growing in a place like that. It's really special. And it's a story people want to hear about. So yeah, I think that it does inspire storytelling.
Having, you know, knowing that you went to San Francisco and now you're living in London and you've probably been other places, I think too, in between there. What is, you know, some advice you might give to Mitchell scholars now around maybe that specifically? So maybe leaving Maine for a time or pursuing new opportunities when that might feel a little bit scary.
Absolutely. And I think that in a lot of places around the world, and that includes a lot of these smaller communities in Maine, and it's wonderful. There's such a value placed on family and community. And I love my family. I love community. But that tends to drive a lot of people to, you know, a sense of you stay close to your family, you stay within the community. There's a lot of value placed on that. So for a lot of people, that is exactly what they want. But some people, including myself, had a drive to go out and explore the world in a sense that they have a purpose and a mission that takes them beyond their current community, and it might take them a bit further from their family. And it can be hard to not feel guilty, and it can be not hard not to let the voice of other people make you feel like your dreams aren't valid or possible. You know, there is a lot of, why would you want to go and work in a big city? Or, you know, you can easily elicit some negative feedback. And just, I would say, believe in the beauty of your dreams, even if they're a bit different from those of people around you. It doesn't mean that they're not valid. It doesn't mean that they aren't right for you. For me, it was just a handful of people along the way that could see where I wanted to head and validated that. You know, like, there'll be, out of 10 people, there might be 9 that are a bit, you know, either silent or questioning / critical of your dream or where you're headed. And then there'll be that one person that gets it, gets where you're going. So for me, like I mentioned, Mrs. Plummer, seeing that fire I had inside of me. The summer before I graduated from Colby, I did an internship at Mass General Hospital. And there was a nurse there, Deirdre. And she had actually lived and worked in San Francisco for a while. And I'm sure that that was part of the spark of going from that's interesting to actually that could be possible for me too. I just thought the fact that she'd gone and lived in such a vibrant city and had then come back, I thought that was really interesting. You just have to look out for those people along the way, because it can be a bit daunting when the path that feels right for you isn't as obvious and there haven't been as many people that have gone down that road. You just have to have a lot more self-belief.
And it is so valuable to have, you know, people like you sharing that, because I do think when you can see it and when you can visualize somebody else doing it, it does make it feel a little bit less daunting.
Yeah. And I'm a strong believer in that as well. You need to see it to be it. So, you know, the people who are cutting a path, I think, have a responsibility to, as best possible, be vocal about their journey, to encourage others to chase after their dreams. And, you know, I remember when I first started going Stern Man with my dad. And I don't want to say that I certainly am not the only girl in the 1980s to have gone out on a boat with her dad. But I do distinctly remember when I started going with my dad, it wasn't the done thing. And for a number of years, I remember being the only girl out on the water. And I was certainly the only one that did it consistently as a summer job for quite a while. And I remember one other girl in Korea, Maine, that went Stern Man with her dad. But it was, you know, and then over time, you start to see more girls, you know, go out, you know, even if it's just for a day or a couple days in the summer. And that's wonderful that, you know, to get the confidence to, yeah, like this can be a viable summer job for me too. Why not? I can contribute to the lobster industry in this way. And, you know, it's good money. Definitely paid more than babysitting. So it, no matter what you do, when you're cutting a path, just to create that visibility, it helps others have the courage to step out as well.
Now that you are, you know, kind of looking back at things and you have a different relationship with the Mitchell Institute today, what is it that you think as alumni that we can do, you know, to sort of stay connected and give back to help the organization as it looks towards the future?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, visibility, sharing our stories of our journeys really helps others. Again, because if you are a first generation college student, that, you know, it takes a lot of confidence to believe that you're worthy, can do of a college education, of that investment, of that choice. So I think that as alumni, we need to be vocal about the journey we've gone on so that others can see that and feel confident in their decisions and their path as well. We are a powerful network for other people sharing not just our journey, but our connections. We're now connected, whatever we're doing. You know, a lot of us are working in the corporate world or working in industries, and we can give other people connections and opportunities from internships to just saying, oh, like I know such and such a person in this industry, let me connect you, or let me review your resume. I can give you some tips. Just giving people time, helping them build connections and network, that's incredibly important as well. So I think that there's a massive role to play as an alumni and a responsibility to help others through the journey as well.
Yeah, I certainly feel that myself. And I think that now going into, I think we're going into 27 years of the organization, yeah, you know, the Mitchell Scholarship really has become very recognizable across the board. And so being able to share with potential employers or others that you're looking to get connected to that you're a Mitchell Scholar is really meaningful. So I think that's exciting for all of us as well.
Yeah, it's a network. It's a powerful network, and the network is largely comprised of the alumni. It's a lot of people, but the alumni play an incredibly important role. So making sure that we're connected, that we're visible. I know that the LinkedIn page is a great growing space. People are sharing, their alumni are sharing their stories, sharing job opportunities, offering advice to other scholars on the way up. So just the more we can do to build that community and that network, the more people will benefit from it.
And that exchange really inspired this podcast. I was seeing the stories that everybody was, you know, sort of introing themselves with. And we always know that they're inspiring, but when you're reading them one after another, it's just, it's hard not to want to share that with the rest of the world. Everybody is on such a unique and special journey that it's been a lot of fun to start to get those out there. Well, we always like to end with a bit of a lightning round. So I will have three words to share. And then just wanting to know, you know, based on when you hear that word, what is your first reaction? One word that comes to mind. All right. So first word is scholarship.
Financial support and validation as well.
Education.
The key to more opportunities in life.
And Maine.
Oh, besides home. Beauty, rugged individualists, freedom, the lobster industry. God, Maine is so much. It's hard to say it in just a few words. It's a special way of life.
Home is coming up, obviously, a lot as an answer to that question. And I think not so much in the physical sense even, but just that connection to this place that has been so meaningful to us. So no surprise to hear that again. And I think what you said about validation really has been a theme in what you've been sharing, and really rings true about the Mitchell Institute, where, you know, the vast majority of scholars are first generation college students and college graduates, and what this can do to really make them feel worthy of getting to that place is really important. So I have loved to kind of hear you talk about that theme throughout.
Yeah, I think that the a word that I haven't mentioned yet, but I think is important, is belonging. Do you belong? Do you belong? Are you worthy? Is it, you know, of achieving a college education? Do you belong in a college environment? And I think that, yes, if you work hard and you have big dreams, of course you do. But if you're the first in your family or in the first generation to go to college, it's easy to question, do I deserve this? Do I belong here? And that is one of the most important parts of the Mitchell Institute and what it offers. It just validates that, yes, you deserve this. You can belong here. And you deserve to chase your dreams, just as other people in Maine are chasing their dreams through the lobster industry, through potato farming and the forestry industries. We all have dreams to chase. Some of ours look a bit different to what perhaps our parents or other family members have, but we all deserve to, if you work hard, to chase those dreams. And the Mitchell Institute really helps support and fuel that.
I agree. Well, thank you, Christina. It has been such a great opportunity to really hear your story, but also be able to tell it more broadly. It's so fun to know that, you know, you were in that first year of the Mitchell Institute scholarship and that you remain so connected and wanting to give back. And we love that. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a huge honor to be able to share this time with you. And I love, you know, doing anything that I can to support the Mitchell Institute. And it's a great way for me to be connected to something that I strongly believe in, and to a great way for me to support Maine, which again is home and so many things that I cherish.
One thing I always say is the mission is so clear. And as a scholar, it's super clear. You really understand it as kind of a product of the organization that we see exactly what has happened and what it has unlocked for us. So makes it very easy to want to give back to that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And we wish you the best and can't wait to stay connected and see what happens next for you.
Yes. Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks again for joining us for today's episode of Scholars Speak. To learn more about the Mitchell Institute, you can visit www.mitchellinstitute.org or follow along on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn.